I'll begin with a brief review of some of the literature relevant to biodiversity and fear ecology. A recent meta-analysis found that as consumer diversity increased, so too did the degree of resource capture. And when the resources being captured happen to be herbivorous species, well then one can see how increasing predator diversity might benefit the plants by further reducing prey densities. But predators don't always succeed in capturing their prey. Indeed, they often fail to do so. And when they do, they may initiate a series of non-lethal predator-prey interactions. And recent work has found that these may be important, such non-lethal interactions may be important in simple model communities. So if predator diversity is important and non-lethal predator-prey interactions are important in simple communities, it begs the question, is predator diversity or does predator diversity influence non-lethal interactions in more species-rich communities? So our central question here is, does predator diversity amplify non-lethal predator effects? And to get at this question, we assembled a community of 8 species. We have at the bottom of the food chain here a collared plant, Brassica oleracea, fed upon by 2 herbivores, the diamondback moth and green peach aphid. The enemy pool feeding upon these herbivores, we've got 5 species, an adult parasitoid, Diadegma insulare, a larval green lacewing, an adult convergent lady beetle, an adult nabid, and an adult big-eyed bug. This particular enemy assemblage, or this particular enemy pool, was chosen because it's exceedingly common in collared fields in eastern Washington. Here you can see that these enemies are indeed lethal to the herbivore. You can see a caterpillar sucked dry by this green lacewing larva. And down here we have a nabid who has finished off the caterpillar and is moving on to the aphids. The enemies also have non-lethal interactions with the prey. Here is a characteristic anti-predator prey behavior of the caterpillar diamondback moth, the larval diamondback moth. It has dropped down on a silk attached to the underside of the leaf, and it does so when the predation threat becomes too much to bear. And over here you can see the convergent lady beetle, that was the predation threat, and it had been cruising around the leaf edge on this leaf. Alright, so one of our main objectives here is to isolate the effect of diversity per se. And the way we do this is by replicating a given level of species richness rather than any one particular species composition. So here you can see enemy assemblages, each having 4 individuals, but represented by just 1 species. And on the right, we have enemy assemblages, again with 4 individuals, but now represented by 4 species. So we have 5 unique replications of high species richness and 5 unique replications of low species richness. And this allows us to test for the effect of diversity per se. Our second objective is to isolate the lethal and non-lethal components of the total enemy effect. Alright, so I want you to focus on this 2x2 here. We have the lethal component of the enemies, present, absent, crossed with the non-lethal component, present, absent. So this 2x2 shows the 2 factors, lethality crossed with fear, but we have a 3rd factor, which is the diversity factor. And so this 2x2 is embedded within monocultures and within the polycultures, and this gives us our factorial structure for the experiment. All right, so specifically, how did we create this fear alone treatment? We start with that, well, we have enemies present within the cage, but we replace prey that are killed by those enemies, thereby eliminating the lethal component of the enemy effect, leaving just the fear component. The lethality alone treatments are created by having no enemies within the cage, but I manually remove prey corresponding to density reductions in the lethality plus fear cages. So there is no fear, just density reductions. The third objective is to measure the direct and indirect effects of these enemies. So here we have a sample enemy assemblage. It scares and kills the prey, So we measured the number of anti-predator prey behaviors. I refer to them as displacements. And we measure prey density. Now, if the particular interaction, the predator-prey interaction, changes the way these herbivores interact with the plant, then the enemies effectively have an indirect interaction with the plant, and we measure that relationship in terms of final plant biomass. So this work was done in field cages in eastern Washington. Our three factors give us a 2x2x2, thus 8 treatments, and with the 5 replications, we have 40 cages. Each cage was populated with 2 collared plants, 20 caterpillars, and about 50 aphids. The cages receiving enemies had 4 enemies per cage, and the trial lasted for 4 days. I'll get right into the data. First, I want to mention that this experiment was done twice, so we have a temporal blocking factor which introduces this trial main effect, which gives us a 2x2x2x2, and forgive me for the somewhat obscene ANOVA table here, but I need to point out several key interaction terms. So remember that we're now looking at our response variable is plant biomass. So we're looking at the effect of enemies on plants. And the key interaction that we're looking at is going to be the diversity by fear interaction, because we want to see if diversity affects the non-lethal interactions of these enemies. You can see that it is indeed significant, and qualitatively this relationship remained consistent across the two trials. Diversity did not appear to affect or interact with the lethal component, as you can see here. We did have this interaction term pop up as significant, and so I just need to explain that in the first trial there was more predation than in the second trial, but it was the same for both the mono and the polycultures. Right, so what you're looking at here is these are the final plant biomass means. We have all three factors represented. In the left panel we have the absence of the lethal component, the right panel the presence of the lethal component, and then the presence absence of fear. And the dark green is the high diversity enemy assemblages, and light green is low diversity. What I want you to notice is that in the absence of fear, we see little separation between high and low diversity, but in the presence of fear, a bit more. And again, in the presence of the lethal component, very little separation between high and low, but in the presence of the fear component, more separation. So I think you can kind of see a trend here. And if we collapse these two panels into one, we get to look at the interaction plot between diversity and fear. And this is the interaction term I showed you moments ago. But you can see that there's more plant biomass in the presence of the high diversity enemy assemblage. And we get good separation, but only in the presence of the fear component. So the density or the diversity effect is only borne out in the presence of the fear component. So what we were just looking at were indirect effects. Now we're going to look at the direct effects between predator and prey, because these form the basis for the indirect effects. So here we have the effects of high or low diversity on caterpillar density. And you can see that between the high diversity and the low diversity enemy treatments, there really was very little indication that one of these two levels of species richness differed in terms of caterpillar mortality. They killed caterpillars equally well. So that probably doesn't explain the diversity effect that we saw in the plant biomass. But if we look at the interaction plot for displacements, we see that in the presence of the fear component, we see tremendous separation between high and low diversity, but in the absence, no separation. You can kind of see that this mirrors what we were finding in the plant biomass data. So this really does seem like a likely explanation for the diversity effect we saw in the plants, in the plant biomass. So revisiting our central question, does predator species diversity amplify non-lethal predator effects? It appears so. The short answer would be yes. Predator diversity amplified the indirect effects of predators on plants, and this effect was driven primarily by increased induction of anti-predator prey behaviors, but not so much by increased prey mortality. And I think some of the implications for this work is that complementarity among predator species may very commonly amplify fear effects. And these effects can be propagated independently of changes in herbivore density. So if you kind of imagine you have landscapes of fear, which are rather ubiquitous, you can have no changes in abundances of predators and prey, but profound changes in community structure driven mostly, or to some degree, by non-lethal interactions. And I'll need to thank the folks in my lab and good folks at the Tukey Research Orchard and our two funding sources, and I'll take questions. Thanks. Yes.
Matt Moran showed that predators can cause fear in each other. So, that, for instance, praying mantis cause fear in the spiders when they're talking to dispersed. Are there any of these predators that are likely to interact with each other in interguild predation? I mean, is the mammoth likely to interact with those?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I need to repeat the question. The question was the essence of the question was. Interactions among predators very likely may inform the phenomena that we observed relative to poly or monocultures. Yes, what I needed to do to maintain the experimental conditions is replace any enemy that either died due to unknown causes or died due to interguild predation. I'm certain that intraguild predation was occurring, but I had to. In order to maintain all four species in any given cage, any enemy eaten had to be replaced. But I really do think that part of the explanation for why there were more displacements, more displaced caterpillars in the polycultures, was that the heterospecifics were less affected by other heterospecifics, as opposed to conspecifics. There seemed to be the conspecifics were on the plants less in the monocultures than the heterospecifics were on plants in the polycultures. Does that make sense? So I think possibly the polycultures had less negative effects of enemy-enemy interaction. Yes? Yeah, you have cut to the heart of a huge question that I've sort of been exploring for a while now. It's going to be very context dependent. Prey that have access to complete information, high prey densities, you're going to see huge fear effects. One of the examples I like to think of is you have a meadow full of elk, and the cougar, appropriately enough, emerges, and if the herd is 10 head, then the relief that the meadow experiences is relief from the herbivory of 10 elk. But what if the herd was 40 and all 40 leave? The fear effect, the effect size, scales up tremendously. But it's a matter of the information. So invertebrates are obviously different than vertebrates. So what you're asking, I think it would just be hugely variable. I don't know. Yes. There are subtle differences that I've seen. The main, these caterpillars tend to feed on the leaf underside. And so whether it's a lady beetle that gets too close or the antennation of the wasp, they're very quick to throw themselves from the leaves. But there is evidence, a number of studies have shown that, in fact a great one by Castellanos and Barbosa, these prey, potential prey, modulate their response. Incredibly specific, you know, the length of the silk relative to the species of the predator, in aquatic lotic systems you have naiads changing their position in the horizon, the water horizons, and there are a number of cases where it behooves the prey to not overcompensate for the threat, and so yeah, we see evidence of this with my particular animal. Not so much. Their approach is to drop down in the silk, and it doesn't seem to. I've seen some differences, well, like the wasp, they're just quick to hop off, but other things, they're more slow stalkers. They often get caught, but sometimes wiggle away. But anyway, yeah, it's going to be specific to the predation threat.
Yeah. Probably just do one more so we can let people
right.
know if they want.
So Sean, in a perhaps even greater context, can you say anything about predator identity and sort of fear factor and whether or not that might ultimately play a role of identity, meaning either foraging style, such a way a person is more active, or just sort of intimidation like a giant red amoeba versus a sort of a wussy crocodile?
Mm-hmm. right. Yes, this I didn't present it here, but I have a rather involved table that examines complementarity among these different assemblages. I don't think, based on my data, I don't think I have a strong species identity effect. Both the wasp and the lady beetle produced the strongest fear effect, if you will, in the caterpillars. But the indirect effect of that, it doesn't necessarily correspond to that effect size. And so, yeah, if I understand what you mean, the identity effect, are you just talking about hunting, the domain and hunting
the
strategy?
The players are basically in the system, which actually could extend beyond those which you use. I could see
right.
perhaps an identity effect being really strong in certain systems, but not so strong in others, depending on who the players are.
Absolutely, and that's something that I think that you'd have to be careful about when constructing your experiment, that you don't have just one really scary predator. And so all assemblages that have that really scary predator get, a relatively large effect size from the assemblage, but it's really just derived from that one enemy. You just have to be very careful to guard against that and, you know, be conservative in your conclusions. But I don't think we had that here. Clearly the wasp and the lady beetle are very active foragers, and they generated the most displacement.
Oh, you can go on. I'm just
going to
escape there.
Oh, okay, great.
If people want to go, that's fine. There's lots
yeah.
of time.
Did you find out another way to expand that? What about the caterpillars, the most caterpillars? I know about the deck, or that side of back moss doing that. Do a lot of caterpillars escape in that way?
With the silk drop
or
technique?
In a way where they're basically
yeah, there are a number of really, really fun defenses that in some way curtail their herbivory rate.
But if you took all of the herbivores in your system, what percentage would have an escape effect like that?
Oh, right.
Flea beetles?
Not, okay, yes, great one. Flea beetles, they launch themselves, you know, miles away. You know, at a threat, and they've got to find their way back to the plant. But like loopers, they do this kind of flicking. You know, they kind of defend themselves. Imported cabbage worm.
Relatively common among the ones that you're working with, or wouldn't be working with.
Well, I was going to say no. Like the fear effect that we observed might not be borne out in these other ones because they're kind of just dopey cows. They're just feeding. If they get hit by the predator, you know, they have to just deal with it. They can encapsulate an egg. They can, you know, flip back. But I chose this system because the diamondback moth larva drops down on the silk. So it's very distinct and easily measured.
Thank you.
Hi.